Hello and welcome to the emergency edition of the Milwaukee's Tailgate Brewers Podcast, part of the MKE Tailgate Podcast Network. I'm Steve Garczynski, your emergency fill-in, because James usually has something going on when big news breaks. What was the last one? The Craig Council.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. Well, no, you filled in for Paul on that one because he had to do his own Craig Council reaction mini pod.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, my own thing there.
Yeah, you know, when news drops late, we got to get somebody to step in. So I'm here for James today. But with us always, we have Paul and Ryan to talk about the Corbin Burns trade, which I don't know. Were you guys caught off guard by how quickly this hit?
Yes. I was shocked. I thought that they were going to go into the season with him and that it was kind of off the table unless they were blown away. And I guess we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. So I had given up on this trade happening, and I'm surprised it did.
Yeah, same. I was stunned. I was absolutely floored. I had just gotten out to Tompkins to join some friends for dinner and watching the Badgers blow a 20-point lead. So that was a real wonderful capper to the night, that happening at the same time. But we had just gotten there, and then I literally pulled up my phone because I had been driving, so I looked at my phone, and I looked down, and I see you have 58 missed messages, and I'm like, oh, shit, what happened?
So, yeah, I found out from Easy, who just texted me swears. So
just swearing, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, well, we're going to get to questions here in just a moment, but remember that you can help support the podcast network at patreon.com/MKETailgate. Long, Glove, and Above patrons get the Minor League Extra podcast with Ryan and James, which you just put one out, and it'll also be the Monday edition of the pod.
Yes, it will. So you get this and you'll get that part of that podcast, not the whole thing, but part of that podcast. People have really liked it. I've gotten multiple people thanking for that one. So
you get that, and then you also get Paul's reporting as eligible Packers mini pods, which there's one left.
One went up like 2 hours ago, so you can go check that out. And there will be a Super Bowl one before the Super Bowl, so that you all know who to bet on and stuff.
There you go, get your betting advice. Get it now. Patrons also get question priority here on the program, and you get a personal shout out here on the pod when you become a patron. Okay, let's get to the questions. Starting off with Jay Google, did the Brewers get enough in this trade to justify the downgrade in their chances at an NL Central title or wildcard berth in 2024? How big a drop are we talking about there? Ryan, do you see this as a big downgrade, like out of the gate?
I mean, it is. So Corbin Burns is probably the single most valuable player, or was the single most valuable player. It's him or Yelich in terms of projection for this year. And the guys that replaced it for this year, you're not going to anticipate that big of a jump. So I think that from that perspective, it is a downgrade for this year. How much that moves their odds is kind of an open question. I'm not 100% sure how much it really moves their odds, because I'm not sure how good the odds were to begin with. Paul can kind of get into that if he chooses here, but I just, from that perspective, I'm not sure how big a change that actually was. I was pretty optimistic. Like Paul, I was expecting here that they were going to go into the season with Corbin Burns and with Willy Adames and kind of make this a last hurrah. And I had sort of made my peace with that, even though that's like that goes against my general gut instinct, which is to keep pushing it out to the future and to kind of keep trying to keep things lit for the future. And so I'd made my peace with it, and yet here we are, and they did what I generally would sort of favor, and I'm not really at peace with that either. I'm not sure what to think about it. So it's definitely a drop, but I don't know if the justification is not going to be coming this year. It's going to be coming in the future if it comes.
Yeah, I think for this year, it's a pretty substantial drop. And I think that they were marginal contenders going in, and that this probably moves them to the other side of that margin, which is why it's so big. Like, losing the 3 to 4 wins that Corbin Burns delivers for you isn't that big a deal if you're a 95-win team. If you are like an 85-win team, or projected to be one, or as I read on Prospectus this morning, if you are an 80.8-win team, which is what the Brewers' Pecota projection is, this matters a whole lot, an immense amount. Like, not making the playoffs is bad, costs you money, makes the season less fun, etc. And I kind of think it's worse than that. I think so. First of all, I kind of agree with Ryan. I was looking forward to this team going in with Burns. I think you have a formidable pitching staff that can do stuff in the playoffs with Burns and Peralta, and adding Hoskins and giving Churio a shot to be something right away is at least exciting and possibly very good. And now I think you got a couple problems, one of which is the rotation's really, really risky. Peralta was awesome last year, but he is famously not consistent. Wade Miley gets hurt all the time. And after those two, it's, Hauser's even gone. There's a lot of unknowns here to go with an unknown at manager, to go with an unknown. And I don't like stacking up unknowns like this. I think it's bad planning kind of all around. And I think you have to look at it in the context of also having lost Woodruff. I think if the Brewers had their way and all things had broken their way, they probably would have tried to bring Woodruff back and been fine trading Burns. And we just would have been like, okay, that's fine. We're going to bring him back. We have the other guys. Give it another shot. Now you don't. You didn't. From last year's team, you lost a whole bunch of pitching war, and that can cascade down to the bullpen too and deliver extra wear and tear there. So I don't like this at all. I think it hurts their chances kind of a lot. And it went from like a team I was very happy with the composition of to one where I'm just not like, now there's a bunch of crap I have to worry about that I wasn't worried about before. Thanks for that, guys. Appreciate it.
I mean, hold on a second. The Brewers won the division by 9 games last year. Corbin Burns was worth on Fangraphs 3.4 win.
Yeah.
Above replacement. I'm just saying he wasn't like some lights out, you know, starter that you like hang your hat on and he is driving you to the title. He was part of a rotation that got him to that point. So I don't know if the rest of the division stinks. I mean, I'd rather have Corbin Burns to try to win it, but I don't think it takes him out of it. They were projected at 86 wins last year and they won 92.
That is right.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just saying, like, we're already writing them off, and I don't know. I think their offense at least has a chance to be better, and they seem to be able to manage both the bullpen and get viable arms in there in some way. So it'll be interesting to see how they balance it. I'm not writing them off yet.
No, there's things they can do here. They could still contend, I think. It's just that I think that that baseball prospectus, who has generally been Pecota has generally been very bullish on the Brewers.
Yep.
And the fact that Pecota was at 80.8, you said, Paul, right?
That's right.
80.8 wins. I think that kind of is an indicator that this team maybe wasn't as good on paper as I thought it was. I was surprised. So last weekend, my brother told me that the Brewers over under for wins in Vegas was 79.5. And I said, oh man, Take the over on that all day. And now that I hear the Pecota number is what it is, I'm second guessing myself on that and wondering if this was shaping up to be more of a rebuild year anyway. Even after they got Hoskins, I think we thought when they got Hoskins, we were super excited about that. Obviously, we thought we were headed towards a contention year. And I think that may have been a misreading of the situation. And if that's the case, then I think that there's more of a case to be doing this. I'm probably just having trouble mentally adjusting to the idea that they're not necessarily, you know, strong contenders right now, but you could still see a lot of ways that this could break in their direction. And you're right 100%, Steve, that, like, you know, you teams can outperform those records.
Well, when's the last time they didn't outplay their Pecota projection?
Probably 2020, and that was, you know, a completely bizarre season that had no bearing in reality. Right. It doesn't count. It's been a while.
Other than that, this run that they've been on since like 2017, they've like continually outplayed their Pecota projections. So
yeah, but not by leaps and bounds. Well, I guess when they're in the 90s, because they've generally been projected every year to be like between 86 and 88 wins. And this year being at 80 instead of 86 to 88, I think that was a splash of cold water in my face.
And they were projected to win the division last year too. I'm sure they're not this year.
Burns was projected to win it like by the slimmest of margins, and that clearly wasn't the case.
Burns had 3.4 Fangraph wins last year. Hauser was 1.8, and Woodruff was 1.4. that's a lot of wins to take off of the top of the pitching rotation. It just is. And I don't think it's wise to count on people stepping up to replace anything close to that, honestly.
Yeah. No, I mean, when you're bringing in youth, I mean, we saw, you know, Burns coming up, that it took him a couple seasons to figure it out, and he was not playable for a full season, basically. So we'll see what these young guys can do, if they can at least be more effective than that coming up. Tricky Henderson, is it just me, or does DL Hall appear to have genuine stuff? Not only does his stuff plus reading indicate a four seamer and a slider to be legit, but also his on-mound swag with chains and attitude appears legit, though I'm unaware of the exact readings of his swag. Are there swag readings anywhere? Is that Baseball Prospectus, or is that somewhere else? What am I asking? Does he start or leave, in your opinion, and why? Peace, love the pod.
Yeah, so I have been operating under the assumption for a while now that he's a reliever, because he's been in the top 100 prospects for a while, and everything I've always read was he's probably headed to the bullpen, where he could be like the next Josh Hader. Okay,
that's who is his number three Pacoda comp, by the way.
Is his number three Pacoda comp. He has, you know, this wicked sort of delivery from the left hand side. He's running not quite Josh Hader velocities, but pretty close. It's mid to, you know, high mid 90s. You know, we're talking about 95, 96, 97 sort of fastball velocity. But he has some things going for him that can maybe potentially make this a starter profile. And I think that the Brewers probably don't do this if they don't think there's a chance at that, or if they think that, okay, we think there's a chance that he could start. And if he doesn't, sort of the downside here is like really, really, really good reliever that can do amazing things that way. But the thing that got me was looking at sort of the pitch selection. It's not a Josh Hader pitch selection at all. He only throws his fastball 53% of the time. He's throwing the changeup 17% of the time, the slider 25% of the time. And he also has a cutter in there as well. That's only 5%, but it's still like, you know, there's a fourth pitch in there. That does sort of make me wonder if they have some things that they think they can do with him and potentially get him to the point that he would start. I still wouldn't bet on it. I still think really good reliever is his most likely outcome, but I will give and allow for the chance that he can potentially start, because kind of just because the Brewers did this, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the first of all, if you go to Savant, his standout trait is his extension, which is why he's Hader-esque. He's releasing the ball very close to home plate. It's definitely hiding in the hair back there. That's all good stuff. The big knock on him, and the reason he may end up in the bullpen, regardless of having more than two pitches, is control. His command and control are lacking. He walks too many people. That is something that you can improve on, of course, but it's the current problem with him. And, you know, if you're going to be walking too many people, it's hard to start you. It's just hard, you know, regardless of your repertoire, you got to throw strikes. And that's the knock there. So maybe they can fix it. They fix a lot of guys. They are in many ways better than the Orioles at that. And so, you know, that's why you go and get a guy like that. And he is definitely, I think, the higher upside guy in this trade too. So to the extent I'm optimistic on anybody, it is Hall. Good stuff. And if he can start, hooray for that. But I don't think he'll start this year. I think he'll be in the bullpen this year. And, you know, that just adds to the starter depth problems.
Yeah, he did last year in the major leagues, and we're only talking about 19 and a third innings here. He did drop his walk rate down to 2.23 and got the walk percentage, which, why is Fangraphs being weird to me? There it is, 6.2%. That's a well below average, or better than average, walk percentage. How much you want to read into 19.1 innings of that, and that with the fact it was done in relief? Yeah. I don't feel super confident about that, but who knows? There might be an underlying reason that they know of, that they're seeing, that says, hey, there seems to be and seems to have been growth here. And so perhaps that will bolster this. We'll have to see. But yeah, I would agree with you 100%, Paul. He is the higher upside of the two guys, though maybe also the lower floor of the two. We'll see.
Okay, we kind of answered this. Steve S. asks, looks like most expect Hall to be a starter. Is there any indication related to that that's anything more than conjecture? I mean, starter this year, do you guys think he's going to be a starter immediately, or do they break him in?
I think that's conjecture. I think that's people reading into the fact that they traded away a starter, and so they seemingly need a starter. But, I mean, they could use a start, but they have starting pitching. They're just not all as good as Corbin Burns, that's all. So I think there's a lot of assuming going on, and I've seen a lot of that just on Twitter, like, oh, he'll come in and start, and that'll be his spot. But I don't think he will unless that command and control gets better right away. So I think it is just conjecture at this point. And that the Brewers have a lot of guys who can potentially start if they do want to start him in the pen.
Arnold did mention something about it, right? I think they said they were going to stretch him out. I think he's something about the. I think they're going to stretch him out in spring training and see where he's at. Which
don't stretch everybody out in spring training.
Yeah, I mean you should, but
yeah, when there's any question, you should do that and see where it goes and see how that goes. But yeah, I still think the bullpen is the more likely outcome, but you give it a shot. So. I think that's worthwhile.
Okay, we got a couple Joey Ortiz questions. Bernie's mustache. Who gets more at-bats at second base in 2024? Ortiz, Terang, or the field? And what will probably determine this is Ted Johnson's question. What does the addition of Joey Ortiz mean for the future of Adames in a Brewers uniform?
Yeah, that was my kind of first reaction when I said something on Twitter last night was this means that Willy Adames is on the block and probably going to be out of town here, right? That's seems to be the likely inference to draw from this is that they're going to move Adames and probably relatively quickly.
That's my assumption. I mean, if you want to give a more generous reading than that, it's future proofing for at minimum next year when Adames may be gone one way or another. But it seems to be a setup for that. Yes. And certainly, I mean, other teams probably see that and are like, oh, maybe time to make an offer for Willie or see what we can get there. So, yeah, I think that there's a good chance that Adames is gone soonish before the season would be my personal bet. And so, you know, that makes the other question, I don't know, between the two of them, who do you play at second base, Terang or Ortiz? I actually don't know the answer to that. They both seem fine.
Ortiz would be if Willy Adames is still on the club.
He's not on the club.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. In that case, it's Ortiz. Ortiz is a plus, potentially plus shortstop. He's one of the most talented defensive shortstops in the minors, or was one of the most talented defensive shortstops in the minors. He was the guy that everybody was wondering in the Baltimore system because they had all these guys like Gunnar Henderson where it was like, well, he's kind of a shortstop, but he's probably more of a third baseman. And then when they drafted Jackson Holliday, and Jackson Holliday is a no doubt like good shortstop, and obviously then also a great offensive player, one of the best prospects in baseball. At that point, they kind of said, no, Joey Ortiz is no longer, because there were people that said, okay, Joey Ortiz might just be like an ace defender, and that'll be his role on the team, and that's, you know, so he's really, really good defensive shortstop. I don't know that, like in the short term, it whatever is fine. But in the long term, he is a guy you want starting at shortstop. He is a really, really good defensive shortstop from actions to great arm. And that's probably the biggest separator between him and Bryce Terang. Bryce Terang has a playable arm for shortstop, but nothing special. Ortiz has a big arm. And so you're going to see a better potential result there. And that's, you know, that matters a lot at shortstop in terms of being really, really good. So I was corrected. I was talking about shortstop and I thought Terang had a better arm than he did. And I went and looked at the grades a few months back now. And it's like, now the arm is not great. Ortiz is a better overall bet to be a shortstop. I would think that if they don't move Adames, which I am expecting, if they don't move Adames, Ortiz is going to see a lot more time there than Terang does.
I think I agree with that too. I'm not super high on Ortiz's offensive profile, but I like it a heck of a lot better than Terang's, and the defense is better. So that I agree with.
Yeah, because I mean, Ortiz is making like league average hard contact. So those sorts of things, whereas Terang was not. Terang's very much sort of down on the bottom of that barrel. Also, just like looking at Ortiz's numbers generally, in the minors, his strikeout rates have been well better than league average. Strikeout rates in the mid-teens, nudging around like 15, 16, 17%. League average is, into the 20s. So there's that. And he does seem to take a walk at pretty much a league average rate. I mean, I'm looking at this and talking about nines, 8.5, 7.8. Those are right around the league average. So there's some secondary offensive skills. The thing that separates Willy Adames from him is Willy Adames has big power. Obviously, like Willy Adames has big power. And Ortiz just, he doesn't have that and isn't going to have that. Like that's not something that is going to be in his bag. I think he can do some other stuff. And, you know, you're looking at in 2022 in AAA, he put up a 154 WRC plus. I guess it was only in 115 plate appearances. This last year in AAA, 389 plate appearances, a 121 WRC plus. So he's solidly above average for the league in terms of offensive production. I think he can be a guy that is around to maybe a little bit better than the shortstop average. So what is that, a WRC plus in the 93, 94, 95 range? I think he can do something like that. And then with his defense, that's potentially a 2 to 3 win player. Maybe spikes a little bit higher up to like 4 or something at some point. But I think he can be that. And that has a lot of value. It's just, it's not Corbin Burns. So I think at his peak, he's probably going to be something like that. So there's value there, but it's not sexy. It's not exciting. And yeah, so people aren't real excited about it.
Okay. Logan Inderdahl asks, this seems to be the most squarely balanced trade that the O's could have gotten. I think it just looks worse to people because of the Polanco deal, but a fair trade means a win for the O's due to leverage imbalance. So I ask you, is it me who is out of touch? No, it must be the kids. So I guess when you trade the star, does it always look bad?
Yes, it does. That is true. And so it's factually true that when you're trading 1 year of anybody, your return is not going to look as good as most people think, because all you think about for if you're most people is they traded Corbin Burns, not they traded 1 year of Corbin Burns versus they traded like 4 years of Corbin Burns. That said, you know, he is a star. He helps the Orioles immensely. And it does still feel a little bit light. And I feel like consensus was that it was a little bit light. A lot of people were out there saying this feels a little bit light. So I kind of agree with that sentiment. Mostly, I think it was. You should get more for an actual star. And I don't think you're out of touch. But I think getting the star is always the PR move, if nothing else.
Yeah, and I think they certainly like these players, I think, better than the consensus does. And they have a good track record of getting guys in that they like and working with them and turning them into better players in trades where those trades were panned by fans and even by analysts who know their stuff. So they do have sort of a history of doing it that way. They're a little unconventional this way. It's a lot like the Rays. You know how the Rays always make deals like this and people go, what are the Rays doing? What were they thinking? What did they get here? And then it generally ends up working out pretty well for the Rays because the Rays are really, really good at all of this. And I think the Brewers are kind of, they're Rays light at this point in that way. So it probably works out okay for them in the long term. Obviously that's what this is about, is the long term. But yeah, I mean, people were always going to be mad about this. I've been saying this for 2 years, that when they trade Corbin Burns, people are going to be mad because they will not get as much as people think that they should get for him. And that's just sort of a reality. Teams don't trade top prospects the way that they used to. Teams hold on to and jealously guard those guys. And also teams like the Brewers prioritize getting guys who have control, but who have already sort of made the major leagues and have some track record there and are like ready to go. They do value that. So yeah, I guess that's pretty much it.
Jay Google's got another question with an eye on the draft. Just how big is the comp A pick and slot money in this trade as well? And then also, should we blame Jim Bowden? Because he had the Brewers getting like four top players for Baltimore. Seems like this was realistic given Burns was due. No, this was not realistic given that Burns was due over $15 million. It was a free agent at the end of the year.
Yeah. So the comp A pick is really cool here. And I'm going to come back to that in a minute because I absolutely love this for the purpose of analysis. It's so perfect. But yeah, the Jim Bowden thing, Jay and I were making fun of Jim Bowden for that at the time and laughing about that with each other about how absolutely silly some of those ideas were and how I didn't think there was any chance they were going to get that. And lo and behold, yeah, that absolutely came to fruition. But this comp A pick, what's so cool about this is that's literally what we would have gotten for Corbin Burns next year if we had just kept him on the roster the whole time. So it's wonderful in that it cancels that out. And we can really, for just analysis purposes, when we look back on this trade, can just balance 1 year of Corbin Burns versus the 6 years or the six control years or whatever springs from that of Joey Ortiz and DL Hall. So we could just, it's a very clean analysis that we can do on this. We don't have to try to figure out, you know, and fudge the numbers on what that draft pick was worth, because that was just going to be what the fallback position was anyway. So yeah. I kind of love that. And giving this front office, the team that put together that draft last year and did what they did in that draft last year, giving them this extra pick at 34, and I think Jay was saying it's about $2.2, $2.3 million, giving them those resources to work with for the draft strikes me as an extremely, extremely good idea, because I think they're in as good a position as anybody to be able to turn that into potentially major value.
Yeah, I guess I'm take the opposite view of that's just boring. They just got what they already had, so whatever.
Well, but it does.
But they didn't lose what they already had.
They didn't lose what they already had, and there's also the risk, which we're going to get into. There's more questions about this later, so I was going to hold off on that. But there's downside here for Corbin Burns too.
Okay, Devin Bearwolf, I'm a little relieved that Burns got traded. Burns' ERA with Contreras catching for him last year, I believe, was in the low to mid fours, where Caratini's was under three. Am I the only one worried about real regression under Burns with Contreras as his predominant catcher?
Well, you won't have that anymore.
Yeah, we won't.
So I will say this. While I would rather have Burns on the team because I would like him leading a playoff charge, that there are some real signs that he is experiencing some actual real regression, and they were glossed over by most of the analysts I read on this trade. Ginny Surly on Baseball Prospectus kind of glossed over, like, yeah, he's gotten worse 3 years in a row, but, you know, that's why we have 3 year samples. He'll probably be okay. And, you know, Eno Saris and three other people on the Athletics review did kind of exactly the same thing. So, I will say this for Burns. I think he's going to a good park for his specific problem that he has.
Uh-huh.
It's very difficult to hit home runs out of Camden Yards. It is, I think, the hardest stadium to hit home runs out of. And when Burns isn't right, that's his main problem. It's not really giving up strings of hits or anything. It's getting bombed. So there's that. But there is, I think, some chance that he is just not playing up his stuff as well. Now, maybe this will all turn around with change of scenery and all that, but it's a risk. And so, you know, if he comes out and he's like a league average pitcher, that would be surprising to most people. I would actually not be that surprised if that ends up happening. I would be a little surprised, but I think he'll be, you know, still a very good pitcher. But I think Cy Young Corbin might not be there anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's gone, because he was like, That's an outlier season for his home run rate.
Absolutely it is.
He was like at 0.3, and he's basically a one home run per game guy now.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100% echo all that. And I think that you really hit the nail on the head. And there has been some stuff. I saw a tweet months ago. Now I can't remember where it was, but it went through some of the underlying stuff with Burns, and there are some reasons to be skeptical and a little bit scared. But the biggest thing is just he's a pitcher and pitchers get hurt. It's the main thing they do. Burns has been pretty durable. He has been pretty durable, but
he's been very durable.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has. He's missed some time, but he
had 32 and 33 starts in the past two seasons.
Yeah, but he was in the 20s in 2021, right?
I mean, 28.
Okay, so he just missed a few. Okay, so not that bad. So he has been pretty durable, and he's been putting up, in an era when nobody goes 200 innings, he's been getting up to that number. But he's still a pitcher, and all it takes is, you know, one thing going wrong and an injury, and you could potentially scuttle all that value. You can be left without being able to trade about the deadline. It would take a pretty serious thing for not to offer the compensation pick, but we literally just saw that serious thing with Brandon Woodruff. So if they to not make him the qualifying offer, so those things are potentially losses down the road as well. So you have to figure all that in. It's not a big percentage chance that he was going to get hurt, but it's possible. It's definitely within the range of outcomes here, and because he's a pitcher, and that's just what they do. They mostly get hurt.
While Ryan tries to play down Corbin Burns' durability, Price Trozen asks, this has to mean Ashby is 100% healthy, right?
So we do have insight on this because Matt Arnold was talking this up on MLB radio. Moss Haas had caught that and put that out there, that he was talking about Ashby, and the team is thinking good things about Ashby. They feel like he's in good shape. He is now, you know, he'll come in basically a year removed from surgery, or almost a year removed from surgery by the time camp opens. So I think that you can legitimately hope that they get something from Ashby.
What was the surgery on?
The shoulder, Steve.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was the shoulder. So that's always frightening, but not all shoulder injuries are created equal. And he was back last year throwing at the end of the season. They just determined that he wasn't ready to go yet, that he wasn't fully recovered enough at that point that they wanted to expose him to game action. But he was already throwing and doing stuff in August of last year. So, yeah.
Paul, do you have faith in Aaron Ashby?
No, but they'll find enough back-end starters. It's fine. The problem, I think, is you can't count on a lot of the Brewer potential starting pitchers to necessarily make a lot of starts. Like Freddie, he gets hurt and is inconsistent and he's not like the big innings guy on the team, never has been. And Miley has been good whenever we've had him, but I urge everybody to go take a look at what Wade Miley does when everybody else has Wade Miley, because it's very different. So I'm just worried about overall starting innings, and Ashby is still a question mark in my mind, and it's just going to be a lot of Joe Ross, and I'm going to be mad the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Miley is he's generally been pretty good since 2018. I think he had one year where he was kind of rough, but he's missed some time.
He misses time, yes.
Yeah, he misses time, which he did for the Brewers last year, too. I wouldn't expect more than about 100 innings from him.
No, I wouldn't either.
Yeah, that's – and, you know, you could cobble together 100 innings here and 100 innings there, but it is cobbling. What you are doing is cobbling.
JDS, Robert Gosser now just about a lock to be in the rotation at the start of the season. Do we agree with that?
I mean, if they trade Willy Adames, there's a good chance they get pitching back for him. So I wouldn't say it's a lock. I think that it's possible. It's within the possible range of outcomes, but I would say
it drastically increases the likelihood that happens.
Yeah.
Like a lot.
It increases it a lot, but it doesn't assure it.
There's still time, and they could still potentially go out and sign some innings eater too. They're $25 million or something under the cap under what they paid last year. So
is there a Yuli Chacin out there?
There's always a Yuli Chacin out there. Always.
Yeah.
Or is that Wade Miley, basically? No, Miley pitched with Chacin, didn't he?
He did.
That was all in that same season. Okay. Morgoth 10, with the trade, is this starting rotation now better or worse than the likes of the 2018 Brewers? If my Googling is correct, the starts leader in order that year were Yuli Chacin, Chase Anderson, Junior Guerra, Brent Suter, Wade Miley, Freddie Peralta, Zach Davies, and then we're under 10 starts. Am I crazy to ponder with no further analysis if the 2014 rotation looks better? Better than the 2018 Brewers?
I mean,
some of those guys are okay. So yeah,
I mean, Chase Anderson was bad. He was bad enough down the stretch in 2018 that the Brewers yanked him and didn't put him on the postseason roster. Junior Guerra was also not all that good down the stretch that year. Suter was a fill-in guy. Wade Miley, yeah, Freddie Peralta just kind of got a little bit of time here and there. That rotation in 2018, go back and look. I mean, it was not, it was very much not special. It was mostly just 4.2 in dive. So, and then Craig sent it to his, you know, three-headed bullpen beast, and they took close leads and, you know, won games with them. That was the main thing to that 2018 team. I don't think this rotation looks worse than that rotation on paper. Certainly not what that rotation became on paper.
Right.
Okay, Ian Pomplin, our starting rotation looks weak now. Do you think we sign an established starter? Are there any names out there you want?
I would bet that we do. It's the reasonableness thing more that there's people out there that I certainly wouldn't mind having. It's just the sort of mid-tier guys are all really old or injury pro. Like, Rich Hill's 44 years old. Don't really want him. Corey Kluber, I don't think is good anymore. Zach Greinke's still out there. That'd be fun. Bad, but fun. Actually, you can make a pretty good rotation out of guys that have pitched for the Brewers before, if you count Woodruff. Because Zach Davies and Jake Odorizzi are out there too. Let's see. But there's nobody I want, and they'll just pick somebody I don't even like very much and turn them into Wade Miley 2.0. I don't know. Ryan, is there anybody you like?
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at this. Like, I don't know what's going on with Hyunjin Ryu.
Yeah.
If that could be a thing. It's just not a lot here. It's, yeah, this part of the market has been largely dried up. Yep. The top part of the market, I mean, you know, Blake Snell is out there, but that's not...
Which would be lovely, but kind of the opposite of what just happened.
Well, okay, so you listen to Effectively Wild, Paul. Meg Rowley complains on basically almost like a weekly basis about how terrible it is to watch him pitch. And I'll confess, I have not watched Blake Snell pitch very much, but apparently it is like a form of torture to actually sit there and watch it because he just nibbles around the zone so much. And I think it drives people insane to
watch. We should definitely sign that guy. It's probably just like having Yovani in his heyday. So let's get that.
Yeah. We've built up the resistance to it. We have the resistance to that particular thing. Yeah. I don't know. They will definitely continue to go out and sign people. But I think it's more likely that this comes in a trade from Willy Adames than anything else.
Just picturing Jonah Hill and Moneyball whispering, like, this is Blake Snell. His deficiency is he's super annoying. he was really effective and nobody can stand watching him pitch.
Doug Davies.
We've
had it.
We do that a lot.
So. Yeah, that happens. Samuel Gill. So who is in the Brewers rotation right now? Do we have a top five?
Yeah. So according to what was on Roster Resource before this, you had Peralta, Miley, Ray, Gosser, Ross, and Ashby. So that's six guys right there to start the season.
Those are guys.
And they are, yeah. So that's probably where you start. Carlos F. Rodriguez is a guy that, you know, is probably in that mix at some point this season, though probably not, you know, obviously right away. But yeah, I think somebody else is coming in here. They're going to make some other move. I don't know that it's going to come from the bottom of the barrel here.
I guarantee it will be made fun of roundly by everybody when it happens.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah, for sure. People go, oh, there's your Corbin Burns replacement. Yep.
Oh, yep. Thank goodness we got whoever it is. Let's see.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, look, Eric Lauer. Oh, look, Julio Teheran. Ah, that'd be fun. that's going to be it, right? He's only 33.
We've been down that road before.
We've seen it.
Mitchell Reichert asks, I personally feel like this move has been leading to something else. So what do you think is more likely, a free agent addition, a trade addition, or a trade subtraction, which he mentions Adamas? I mean, I think we're all waiting for the Adamas shoe to fall.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I guess I'll go slightly more on the Adamas shoe bringing back pitching, like Ryan said, but they'll do something.
Yeah.
We won't go into with just this.
Yeah, trade subtraction. Yes, if you trade Willy Adamas, you are getting something back for him. And the way that they do things is generally to get guys who are ready in the minors. There's a really good shout here that the Dodgers shortstop situation is still kind of iffy for this season, and they sure could use that. And the Dodgers just like absolutely shit out good pitching, like it's nobody's business. So they could send one or even two of those either major league ready or near major league ready arms over in exchange for Adamas, not from the top of the heap, but from, you know, the middle of their pile of just insane number of young starting pitchers. I could see that.
My only lemonade, is it possible that the Brewers were waiting to make this trade until after they signed Rhys Hoskins? In his press conference, Hoskins stated that he only considered contenders. Oof, that seems like a possible bait and switch.
Yeah, so we were talking about this a little bit today. I kind of think that maybe the timing of it was that they waited to do something like trading Burns until they had got their Rhys Hoskins on board. I'm hoping they didn't make promises that they shouldn't have to Scott Boras, because I think that could actually have long-term detrimental consequences. If we find out that they were telling tales to Scott Boras about what they were planning to do this year, and that turned out to be bull, I could see that being held against them in the future when they're trying to sign guys in the Rhys Hoskins ilk. I could see that potentially being a problem. We have no evidence that that's actually true, but it's not unfair to speculate, I think.
I agree. I'm sure that they didn't mind the timing, even if it was accidental. So that's probably the most charitable interpretation of that. I do think they probably still think they can contend, but, you know, it's a harder sell when you don't have Corbin Burns than when you do, whether they believe it or not. So, yeah, maybe a little subterfuge there. I could definitely see that being the case.
Yeah, I just hope, again, that the promises were not made.
Yes.
Morgoth 10 asks, seen on various sites and such, some folks complaining, why not wait until the deadline to trade Corbin Burns, claiming that we can get just as much value back then as now. Aside from the obvious that he could get injured, my logic leads me to think that we'd get less in return for a deadline deal. So setting aside the injury question, how might a return for a deadline deal have differed?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways it can go. First off, with the injury or performance issue, if his performance continued to degrade, if you're looking at a guy with a 4-something ERA at the trade deadline, I don't think you get this sort of return for him, unless the underlying stuff was just really still very, very good. So there's that risk. And also just, you know, that there's always going to be a market at the trade deadline. Somebody's going to need starters, right? Somebody's going to need a starter. So that part of it should be pretty solid, but you don't know what people are going to actually have on offer at that point either. And when you're getting down to just a couple of months, teams have been reluctant to give up a ton when they're talking about just a couple of months, right?
Yeah, I'd say that's a little overblown. I think there's two big downsides to the deadline. One of which is your guy might not be worth as much, and pitchers do get hurt, and then you're screwed. Like, think about Woodruff last year. But there often are desperate teams at the deadline, and so it's not a foregone conclusion that you get more just because of a few extra months of service. That's often not how it works. That's sort of communist thinking, that the labor, that the price is just built in with sort of that inbound labor versus the supply and demand of the market, which is how this actually works. But your other big risk is the Josh Hader factor, that you are in sort of a good-ish spot and you get a deal that makes sense, and then it blows up in your face and you get yelled at by people and you miss the playoffs. That's also no fun. The PR from it now doesn't seem great. You get yelled at a lot by people right now, but that will blow over in a few weeks and nobody will remember. Whereas everybody's going to remember the Hader trade deadline for a long time because it seems like it was really, really, really bad.
Yeah, that's 100% true. Just for my own sanity, I appreciate that they did this ahead of time.
I mean, you can always just, you know, turn your phone off and not check Twitter, Ryan. Yeah, that would, that is an option.
Is it, though? Is it?
Turn off the notifications. Steve DeRozier says, the Burns trade after the Hoskins signing has me questioning what the Brewers roster strategy is for this year. What are your thoughts on the seemingly divergent roster strategies? And Matt Arnold did say that he believes they're still contending this year.
Oh, good. I'm glad he did that. Puts me at ease. I think, so first of all, if you are going to play for the Brewers, it is to some extent like going to play for the Rays, and you know what you are signing up for. You are signing up for this, and you should even be under the impression that, like, they might do something I don't like, but will probably still contend or something like contend. So, yes. However, you know, this is what the Brewers do. They try and build for the future at the expense of the present, understanding that they can still usually work some magic in the present most of the time. That's just how they work. And I don't even think they're lying. I think they do believe it. And most Major League Baseball teams in sort of the middle of the pack, I think all believe they can contend. You kind of just, you know, you understand things can go wrong, but you project things to go right. And you try and sell that belief on everybody. And so I don't even think they're necessarily lying, but you know, is what it is. They get an offer they like, they're taking it. They're not in this for the present at all.
Yeah, and Hoskins just, so let's run down the list of things that Hoskins is. All they had to do was give him money. They didn't have to do anything else. There was no trade given up here. And it gives them a legitimate middle of the order bat, which I think for player development purposes could come in handy, where you don't necessarily have to stick Jackson Chourio right in the middle and, like, people have to pin their hopes that, like, Jackson Chourio is going to be great right away. I think having a better middle of the order, having a better core to build around, takes a little bit of pressure off of the younger players to feel like they have to be the producers. They have Rhys Hoskins in the middle of things, and that's going to work. Now, you can trade Rhys Hoskins if you're out of it, if things have fallen apart and they're bad. You can trade Rhys Hoskins if he's doing well at the trade deadline, and that's fine. Or you can hold on to the end of the year if he's doing really well and you're maybe competing or whatever. Hold on to him to the end of the year, and then you can go ahead and potentially get a draft pick for him. So there really wasn't a lot of downside here. The complaints about this one have really left me kind of flat-footed, because I'm wondering, why are people complaining about this? It literally was just money, and all anybody wants Mark to do is spend money. And as we spent money on this, and, like, so let's just, like, not look a gift horse in the mouth here, people. Like, this is a good move, regardless of the team context and whatever else going around it. Like, yeah, just it was a solid move. You could kind of take it independently from the other stuff and say, you know, the rest of it doesn't really matter how it plays with this other thing. It seems a little bit weird. It's counter-buildy, hi Nick, but you know, it's not it doesn't really hurt them in any way, so you might as well do it that way.
Made Wiley with a very Ryan question. Are the Brewers becoming the Brighton of MLB? Seems like it's becoming a core strategy to develop talent to use to bring in even younger, more controllable talent.
Yeah, so you probably guessed that's what Brighton does. They develop up players. They get kind of good players from around Europe. They bring them in. They get them to be shining on the biggest stage in football in the Premier League. And then they sell them off and collect more good young players and, you know, do the thing again. And it has got them punching way, way above their weight in the Premier League for a little while now. It's really worked out now. They've been through a couple managers. It seems to be a pretty good working strategy for them. And I think it's not a terrible comparison to what, you know, all of these teams are trying to do. The Brewers, the Rays, Cleveland, formerly Oakland before they decided to do their whole thing. It's not different really from what, you know, they're trying to do. And so yeah, this is kind of what you're doing. And it's, there's a bitter pill to swallow with this. And Steve, this goes back to when me and you and JP started the podcast. We used to talk about this all the time, that there was going to come times, because we were looking at, you know, a really good young core is what we were all excited about. You know, Lewis Brinson and Monty Harrison were going to be the, you know, the great guys to, and Corey Ray were going to take us to the promised land. And but we sort of knew that at some point, if they wanted to make this a going concern, they were going to have to trade those guys away before they became free agents to restock the farm. And JP and I would go back and forth about, you know, how do you do that? What's the best way? And how willing are fans going to be to tolerate it? And I think we've seen that the fans have not particularly loved it as a strategy in the, you know, the Josh Hader trade and now the Corbin Burns thing and pending the Willy Adames thing. But I think it is the strategy that they need to use to kind of have the success that they're having. It's always going to be kind of a difficult thing for people to stomach.
Okay, we have a question. Well, it's quite the paragraph. From new listener Leslie, says they're really digging the show, but a lifelong Brewers fan since the early 80s. Saw a ton of games at County Stadium as a kid, including the filming of Major League. They're in my blood. I just want to offer, last year was so damn much fun to watch. Honestly, one of my favorite seasons over the past 40 years. Win or lose, what confuses me is whenever I hear talk about Terang on any pod, it's been somewhat negative or pensive. Obviously, he struggled at the plate, but A, he's a rookie, and B, the entertainment value and excitement surrounding every single play had me on the edge of my seat. It was a phenomenon I've never experienced as a Brewers fan on any level. Am I alone in that awe? I guess what I'm saying is, why aren't more people jazzed and focused on the defense? All of the metrics rabbit holing can come off as doom scrolling to me in a way. Baseball is complex, but also beautifully simple when you soak it in from the gut. How about we stop and smell the roses once in a while? Is any of this a ringing true, or am I just old? Cheers. Keep up the good work. So I guess is Terang's defense that good?
So I think that is a fine way to consume the game. And Bryce Terang on defense is very exciting. Bryce Terang is excellent. One of the problems that we all have here as baseball nerds is sort of the preconceived notion of what Terang's offensive profile is likely to be. And while there was some upside there at one point, his offensive profile is likely not very good. And when he comes up and has seasons like that at the major league level, it kind of confirms the priors that we have about him. So yeah, he's just a rookie. But our idea of Bryce Terang coming into that season was there's a good chance he's not going to hit very well. And there's a good chance he'll never hit that well. And that is what happened. And so it does kind of crush our optimism. Now, he's a great defensive player. He's a very, very good defensive second baseman. He'll always be a good defensive player. But if you don't have the bats, you know, that there's limits to what you can bring to the team. That's it.
Yeah, I think that's unfortunately the most likely outcome. He seems to be headed for utility player land, where he can play a bunch of positions at a solid to well above average level, but is just not going to carry the stick where you want him in the lineup on a daily basis. That seems to be more and more looking like the most likely outcome. I wouldn't completely discount his ability to potentially add strength and get bigger. He's still not very old. He's, what, a year and a half younger than Joey Ortiz? He's not very old at all, even though he's been in the system forever because the Brewers got him when he was fairly young. But, yeah, I think that it is fun to watch him play defense, but it's also not that fun to watch him hit. So, and there's just not a lot of value there. And so that, it sucks. It's unfortunate, but I'm hoping that he improves, but I'm not necessarily counting on a huge leap forward at some point here. We will see.
What is his ceiling as a hitter? I mean, if he ends up kind of doing as well as we could possibly expect, I mean, he's never going to hit with any power, right?
Keith Law said a few years back now, like 2 years ago maybe, said he thought he had 15 to 20 home run power in him once he figures out how to attack certain pitches and like learn leverage. I don't know. That seemed optimistic. And but then again, in his AAA season in 2022, he hit like, I think it's 13 or 14 home runs playing in the most home run suppressing ballpark in AAA. So I think, and if you looked at his home road splits, he had like 4 home runs at home and 9 on the road. So there might be more home run power in there than you think, but the reality is that he doesn't make hard contact that often. His Statcast numbers are bad. Paul, do you have it handy? What actually his?
I absolutely do not, but they're not good.
Yeah, they're bad. They're below average. So it's not something that you'd necessarily get excited about that. And James Anderson and I have long had this going back and forth where I'm pro Terang and he's anti, and largely because of, you know, just the hard contact issues. So, yeah.
Okay, well, that does it for questions this week. I don't know, talking it through, do you guys feel any better, feel worse about it? I it's a young team, so I guess I'm like, well, we'll just wait and see what happens.
I'm unchanged from my initial reaction. I wish they had not done it. I kind of get why they did, because they do stuff like this all the time. But I was looking forward to a more complete build on this Brewers team. And now they've added a bunch of questions and it annoys me. So, no, I still feel bad about it, generally.
Yeah, I'm still I profoundly meh about this whole thing. Like, it's just very ambivalent because, like I said, I was ready to do the thing that I'm generally not ready to do, which is to go all in-ish on a season, and was ready for that, and then they took that away. And for players that I don't love, you know, I think there's more value here than a lot of people are seeing, but I don't love them. And I would much have preferred that they got Kobe Mayo. I would much prefer that they would have done that, but I don't think he was offered, because I think if he'd been offered, the Brewers probably would have gotten him. So yeah, I don't really know where to go from that. Like, you have to take what's available to you on the market. And the Orioles have been steadfast in refusing to deal those top young prospects. They really have been. This is sort of a revelation. Remember the fact they sold the team, or the announcement on the sale happened literally the day before this. And it already seems like the Orioles fans had the best 2 days of their lives right there, where they got notice that the Angeloses were going away, and they got notice that Corbin Burns was coming in. Pretty happy for them. I was an Orioles fan in the mid-90s for a minute when BJ Surhoff went there, so I guess I can revive that. I have a Brady Anderson jersey in my closet. I'm sure it doesn't fit, but I still have it.
Well, I want to see you wear that thing out. If Corbin Burns wins the Cy Young for the Orioles, I think you should have to wear it.
I should have to wear my Brady Anderson jersey? Yeah. Dig that out.
That'll look good. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I was expecting Burns to be traded once the Woodruff news kind of came down. I was like, okay, if they can't pair those two together, I think it might be time to cash this in for some future value. So yeah, we'll see how it works. It's interesting, and I don't know, maybe we wait for that Adames trade and then we can take that as an entire package and see what the value was and whether or not it was worthwhile.
Yeah, that might be a thing too, that the Adames trade ends up being better in some ways than the Burns trade, at least by expectations. People are definitely expecting a lot less. And oftentimes in these cases, it's all about your expectation, what you were thinking you could possibly get. All winter, people have been dreaming on all those Orioles prospects. Then they find out they're doing a trade with the Orioles, and then they find out that it's Joey Ortiz and DL Hall. So I get the letdown aspect of it, but I'm also was expecting it all along. So,
okay, so we got a couple new patrons and an opportunity to thank them. Ryan, you want to do that?
Yeah, the aforementioned Leslie, thank you for joining up. We do appreciate that. And yeah, you can just send those questions when we put out the call for questions. So, and then Jason, we think maybe in Vermont, Jason VT is what we got here. We think it's maybe Jason in Vermont, which would add to our empire all over the world. We are still very, very big, I think, in Spain. Or no, Portugal, the other one. Yeah. The other Iberian Peninsula place.
Okay, well, that'll do it for this week. Another emergency pod. Remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any place you can leave a review. Please leave that 5-star review. Paul, we haven't had you reading any 5-star reviews lately.
We haven't had them in a while, and I stopped checking them. So I will start checking again.
Okay.
But I don't have one handy right now, and I'm not looking.
You're not as busy with football now, so you can get back to just focusing on the baseball pod.
True.
Yeah, the last one was really mad at me personally. So,
oh yeah,
that's at the top on there. Yeah.
Five stars and mad at Ryan. That is the perfect review.
That's why we didn't read it, was because it wasn't five stars. If they had put five stars, then it would have had to have been read. That is the contract. That is the deal.
Man.
So they screwed that one up by not giving us the five stars. You can say whatever you want about me. Give me five stars.
So, hey, just a reminder, you can support the podcast by becoming a patron. Go out to patreon.com/MKETailgate. $2 a month, you get question priority. And then you'll be ready for the next episode, whenever that is. Guys, when do you think you'll be back?
Next weekend. I think we'll be back next weekend.
So, some of us will. We'll see.
We'll see. Okay. Yeah.
Paul will be recovering from the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl weekend. Yeah, that's right.
We'll see how things go. Who knows?
Ryan's thinking about his big plans for the Super Bowl. What scotch are you going to bust out for that?
I'm looking at some right here. No, it's not the Packers, so why would I bust out like really good stuff? I'll maybe have some of my in-laws got me a bottle of Jameson Black Barrel, so maybe I'll bust that out.
What's Matub say? Open your best bottle?
Yeah, that's part of the spiel. I have forgotten the whole spiel.
Yeah, I know. He does it better.
Yeah, he does.
So
it's mostly about telling your friends you love them, so do that.
There you go. So anyways, thanks for joining us this week, and tune in next week for Milwaukee Tailgate.